We put two or three Bibles to the book of Genesis in the 39th chapter. Genesis 39 will be the place of our study this evening. It's really great to be with you. Brother Young always does such a fine job leading our song service, and I'm just mindful of many of the talented brethren that do lead in that way here. We're very blessed. And Brother Arnie, I appreciate your prayer so much, and to be mentioned by name. I just take all that I can get. It's a very special thing. To have your name brought to before God on behalf of another, it means a lot to me. And I try to pray for people by name as well. It's a very important thing to do. And I'm glad that you're here. It is back to school time already. And I feel a little bit different about it this year than most years, because my oldest is going to school, going to kindergarten this week. And so we're starting that. That begins. But I have always tried to, a couple of times a year, have some lessons that are focused more towards youth issues and challenges that the youth face. And do try to do this and do a back-to-school lesson, especially at this time of year. And I just can't say enough how proud I am of the youth of this congregation. I mean, we really do have a great group of young people here at Jackson Heights. And they just impress me again and again for their love for the Lord and their parents, the way their parents work with them and raise them, the way their parents love the Lord. I'm impressed because they're smart young people, high achievers and leaders. And they do a good job at working hard, at helping others, at inviting friends to church and setting good examples at school. I get to teach Bible classes with some frequency every year, do a quarter with the junior high and a quarter with the high school. Most years I get to do both, but at least one or the other. And in those settings, they impress me again and again. And so I kind of think about different ones. I was putting this lesson together, and I'm thinking, what do I say to just encourage these fine young people that as they leave their homes, as they leave their neighborhoods, and some of them are leaving their towns to go back to school, how can I encourage them? How can we encourage them to first remember who they are, and second, to encourage them in their walk with the Lord? And I got to thinking about a young man in the Bible who found himself far from home, and for a very much longer period of time than just a semester. His name is Joseph. And we can encourage our youth if we encourage them to be young like Joseph. If you would turn with me to the book of James, you're already there, Genesis 39. I want to read with you verses 1 through 7 as we refresh our minds as part of Joseph's story and Joseph's account. Genesis 39 verse 1 says, "Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. The Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. Then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had put under his authority. So it was from the time that he had made him overseer of his house and all that he had that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was on all that he had in the house and in the field. Thus he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate. Now Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph. And she said, lie with me." It may be that we'll never face a situation exactly like Joseph's. I mean, to be betrayed by your brothers and sold into slavery and find yourself in a foreign land. This is an extreme situation. But I would suggest that in various ways we will encounter similar trials and temptations. And in fact, we'll face those temptations nearly every day. The Apostle Peter wrote to Christians in 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 13. 1 Peter 1 verse 13, "Therefore, gird up the loins of your mind Be sober and rest your hope fully upon the grace that is to be brought to you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not conforming yourselves to the former lusts, as in your ignorance, but as He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct. Because it is written, be holy, for I am holy. We're called to holiness as the children of God. That there will be times of temptation and trial and a war to get us to conform to lusts and former ways before we walk with the Lord. There will be times of temptation. Now, we do pretty good when we're together here in the auditorium, serving the Lord, and we understand the right thing, want to do the right thing. Of course, the trouble is, there's always Monday, and then you leave the house. And you leave the house and you go to school, young people. You leave the house and you go to work, adults. We leave that house. And on a daily basis, we go out into a world full of temptations, threatening to rob our holiness. We hear the voice of temptations call as clearly as Joseph heard the voice of Potiphar's wife. It might be a similar temptation calling to you, like Joseph, that temptation to corrupt your purity. There might be a coworker. There might be a boyfriend or a girlfriend who's pressuring you to have sex. And it's that voice of temptation calling, just like Potiphar's wife, saying, lie with me. Or it might be the temptation to corrupt our integrity. Someone at work is pressuring you to lie for them or to cover for them on some things that aren't right. Someone at school is asking you to help them to cheat on some things. And it's that voice of temptation saying, cheat for me, lie for me, steal for me, that voice calls. It might be the temptation to corrupt your body with alcohol or drugs. When some of your friends are doing those things, and you know, at the moment you don't see the ill effects, just everyone's having a party, everyone's having a good time. And it's that voice of temptation calling and saying, come get high with me. Tune out with me. Maybe it's the temptation to corrupt the mind with dirty movies or explicit internet sites. And temptation's calling saying, watch this for me. Lust for me. Whatever it is, every Christian, every day, is challenged by the voice of temptation, the young and the old alike. And so I want us to consider Joseph because his story illustrates how we stay true to God when we are on our own, when we are out away from home, and when temptation comes calling, especially when we're young. Let's talk about being young, but let's talk about being young like Joseph. And the first thing I want to notice in your notes, number one, is Joseph has temptation call in the form of Potiphar's wife to corrupt his holiness, to leave the way and the path of God. I want you to observe this about Joseph. Joseph didn't excuse evil when he was tempted. Joseph did not excuse doing some evil when he was tempted. I mean, the way Joseph handles this temptation by Potiphar's wife, and especially at a young age, most scholars agree, here's a young man, he's in his late teens, he's in his early 20s, he's a young man with the passions and inclinations of a young man. This is impressive. And he stands up in an area where many today, and I'm going to say young and old, where many today fall down. In that, he could have made so many excuses why he just ought to go ahead and indulge in this temptation, commit this evil. He could have found reasons and rationalizations to sin and just go ahead and do this, but he did not. I'm just so impressed. I say, be unlike Joseph. Handle temptation like Joseph. I tell you, he didn't excuse evil by his youth. There are people who often indulge temptation today by saying, I'm young, and I'm only young once. Joseph was young, late teens, early 20s. You know, I had to experiment with things. I had to try new things and gain some experience. I'm young. It's a big world. I'm young. We should do these things now. Yeah, Joseph was young, but he didn't use that as an excuse. to experiment in doing things he knew to be sinful. Joseph understood that right is right and wrong is wrong, no matter your age. And he appreciated that. He doesn't say, oh, I'm young, I'll do this. He didn't excuse evil with his anonymity. Joseph finds himself very far from home. You think about what that's like to be a young man and be so far away from home. And it's not like he got to choose. You know, some people go away to college. They, for the most part, get to pick. His brothers made that choice for him. He goes to this country where nobody knows him. Nobody cares about him. How does that feel? Lonely, maybe? Fearful, maybe? I'm all alone. But I think there's something else that you can feel when you're far from home and nobody knows you, and that's anonymity. I'm anonymous. No one knows who I am, and that brings about some possibilities when there's temptation for the flesh. I mean, no one knew Joseph. No one knew that God spoke to Joseph's father or Joseph's grandfather or Joseph's great-grandfather. They don't know he comes from that kind of family with that kind of morals and religious standing and appreciation. They're not going to care what he does so long as it doesn't interfere with their business. And no one's ever going to know if he chooses to go ahead and commit this sin with Potiphar's wife. And I'll tell you that when people feel like they are unknown or feel like they can't be caught, there's not that accountability, they are given to indulge in temptation. They're given to go ahead and do whatever it is that temptation is calling them to do. And yet Joseph does not make that excuse. Joseph doesn't make an excuse to indulge in evil by saying, look at the behavior of others. Look how other people are acting. It must be okay if other people are doing it. I mean, here's Mrs. Potiphar here, and she's obviously a consenting adult. She's just throwing herself at him. I mean, what's it hurt if she wants to and if I want to? If she wants to do wrong, then would that make it right? Young and old choose to sin sometimes because everyone around them is doing wrong. They get to feel a little discouraged. What's the point of trying to do right? Why be made fun of again for trying to do right? Everybody else around me is cussing. I guess I just ought to cuss up a blue streak too. Everybody else around me, they're drinking or having this party. I guess I ought to just fit in. I mean, everybody else is doing it. And if everybody else is doing it, why I just ought to join in? Well, Joseph, just because she wanted to do evil, Joseph didn't buy into that crowd, into that pressure. He didn't make an excuse. I tell you, he didn't make an excuse to do evil by his circumstances. Joseph didn't look at this situation and say, you know what, normally I wouldn't, but this time I'm entitled. Because look what happened to me. My brothers betrayed me. I'm a slave. I used to be a free man, but now I'm a slave. This man Potiphar, he owns me and he works me. I mean, I run everything in this house. He doesn't even know what's going on. Just make sure his dinner's hot in front of him. What a great way to get this guy back. How about I fool around with his wife? I'm entitled. No one does right by me. Why should I do right? There's plenty of people that act that way today. Like the evils of others somehow justify their own evils. Like they're entitled because they've had some bad luck or poor circumstances. And it's not so. It's not so. Finally, Joseph doesn't make an excuse to do evil with his blessings. I want to unpack this a little bit. You say his blessings, the good things going on in his life, that might have been an excuse to sin in this way. Well, I want you to notice a couple of things that Joseph really is blessed. The Holy Spirit takes the time to tell us that Joseph is a handsome man. Now, most people would consider that as a blessing. Some of us will never know. Won't have that cross to bear. But, the Bible tells us that he is a handsome man. He's a good-looking man. That's a blessing. And what else did it tell us about him? That he's a successful man. He's a talented man. Now, a lot of us wouldn't want to be a slave. Like Joseph was a slave, we wouldn't want that career. But I tell you, if you had to be a slave, Joseph did it right. Because what we read those first few verses in the chapter, and it's just promotion after promotion after promotion, isn't it? He handles everything. It's given well. God's blessing it. It's increasing. And so he just moves right on up until ultimately he's the number two guy in that house. In our society, people like that often feel that their talent or their looks or their position makes them a law unto themselves. But it's a different set of rules for them. Notable politicians have very publicly ruined their marriages and their reputations. And they said, well, I felt like the rules didn't apply to me. Joseph wasn't that way. And I think, too, you know, especially in our congregation, there's just so many talented youth here, blessed youth here. What a blessings you have, but don't use those blessings as an excuse to be less for God. I mean, it's great to be athletic. It's great to be that star player, and you break school records, and you win the big game, and you earn scholarships. And it's great to be talented and blessed with musical ability, and you know, you play in the band, you hold recitals, you can earn scholarships, or maybe be blessed with that intellect, okay? I mean, the numbers just click for you. And you're going to be able to understand and unlock math and science and physics and calculus, and you're going to earn scholarships. I mean, in all of these ways, those blessings of talent and ability will be twisted into temptations for you. I just want you to know, they will be. They will be. Because you might come to think that it's more important for you to be at the ballpark or be at rehearsal or be studying for the big exam than to assemble with the church or to participate in a Bible class or to attend some special spiritual event like a youth weekend or even a Friday night singing, something like this. The temptation is to put God second behind your talent. God's blessed me in this way, and I need to just use that. But you forget about God in the process. And parents, we must not fail our children by telling them that it's better to put God second. Because that's never true, and you and I know that's never true. We need to be there for our young people. Be there for our young people. And encourage them to be young like Joseph. And not allow yourself the right to make excuses to do evil that you might be tempted to do. I'm going to go into a second point with you. Joseph just impresses me how he handles this temptation when he's on his own, far away from home. And that is that Joseph didn't think of himself when he was tempted. Joseph wasn't thinking only of himself when he was tempted. Joseph wasn't thinking selfishly, only of his own desires, only of his own, you know, possibilities. When he's tempted by Potiphar's wife, he begins thinking of the interests of others. And the story of our sins and our poor choices, it's often the tale of selfishness, is it not? That we want what we want, and we're going to take it. We don't think about how it will affect others. Mrs. Potiphar is throwing herself at Joseph. He's actually thinking about others. Not the own inclinations or curiosities of his flesh. Look at his words. In Genesis 39, verse 8, she said in verse 7, lie with me. Verse 8, but he refused. Now those are three powerful words there. But he refused. You remember these three powerful words? Just say no. When some of us were in high school and coming up, and Nancy Reagan and people said, you know, Miss Reagan, that's very simplistic. Teenagers today, they're complicated, and there's a lot of pressure out there to do drugs, and you're just going to tell them to just say no. And yeah, that's the big idea. We're going to tell them to just say no. I don't think that people are too sophisticated to understand say no. And really, when you come to all temptations, that's the key, isn't it, to just say no? And when it says, but he refused, that means Joseph just said no. And we could save ourselves a whole lot of trouble by just learning to say no. But anyway, you go on to verse 8, but he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There was no one greater in the house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife." She says, "Come lie with me." Joseph says, "No." And who's he thinking about? His words tell us he's thinking about his master. He's thinking about Potiphar. He thinks he has this view of his master, and this is so admirable, that my master's done nothing but good for me. My master's taken good care of me. He's promoted me. He trusts me. He doesn't know what's going on in this house because he trusts me so much. He's thinking about Potiphar. If I did this, what would it do to my master? We face different temptations, whether it's to cheat or lie or steal. And particularly young people, you know, in the school setting, think about those in authority. Think about the teachers that trust you and the aides that trust you and even your parents that trust you. And you start doing a lot of wickedness and a lot of evil and you break their hearts. You destroy that trust. It's so easy to do when we're not thinking about anyone by ourselves, but Joseph was thinking about how this would affect others. What would this do to Potiphar? And he said this too. If you notice at the end of verse 9 there, he said, "He's held back nothing from me except for you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness?" Joseph was thinking about his morals. Now, when we study Joseph's household and Jacob and, you know, the two-mom situation with Rachel and Leah and all the brothers, and Jacob plays favorites, the brothers are jealous, you know, a lot of friction between the wives. It's just one big dysfunctional family mess, is it not? You know, you have a bad day in your home, you just read a little bit about that household and you say, "There is hope. There is hope." But in all of this just wrecked, messed up family life and background that Joseph has before slavery, someone had got this message deep into his mind that it is never right to sleep with another man's wife. He got a hold of that. "You are his wife. How could I commit this wickedness? That's wrong. That's always wrong." And how refreshing it is to read some moral absolutes in a society and day and age where, you know, most of our neighbors and friends kind of like to make up right and wrong as they go along. The situation ethics and what feels good now is the right thing to do and what works is the right thing to do. Instead of understanding there is right and wrong, there's righteousness and wickedness, there is sin, my friend, and God is the one who dictates by His Word what is right, what is wrong. And from a young age throughout our lives, we need to appreciate that and to stand for what is right. Stand upon those morals. In a time of temptation, he was thinking about his morals. And the third one he's thinking about in this time of temptation was his Maker. He thought about God. What did he tell Mrs. Potiphar? He said, "How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" Sin against God. He's far from home. He gets to be his own person. Nobody's going to know. Nobody's going to tattle. He has a tremendous respect for God. And understands that God knows. And he must answer to God. And so mindful that God is watching him and God is with him, he resists temptation, not thinking about himself. I want to tell you, young people, be young like Joseph. And in times of temptation, think about how your decision affects others. What would it mean to your parents, your friends, your girlfriend, or your boyfriend, both in terms of physical consequences and the spiritual consequences? What would it mean to Jesus Christ who gave his life for you? To redeem you and make him one of his own. Think about your Maker God and what he wants. Be young like Joseph. Finally, tonight, in time of temptation and trial, I want you to see this, that Joseph suffered for resisting temptation. to end this lesson with a different point. I tell you I would. That when Joseph took this stand for righteousness in the face of Potiphar's wife, she just dropped to her knees and repented and was, "I'm so sorry I put you in this position, Joseph. You're a fine young man. You're a good boy. And I've got to get some things worked out with my husband." And Potiphar was so pleased and gave him some other promotion. And I mean, it was just wonderful. That's not what happened, though. You know that's not what happened. What did happen? What did happen? It's unfair, but Joseph suffered for doing right. First off, did she leave him alone? No. Look at verse 10. "So it was as she spoke to Joseph day by day that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her." This woman's like the devil. She just keeps coming back. And he's got to resist her. That's not very good. That's unfair. Finally, it pushes to such a head where she grabs a hold of his cloak, and that's kind of what's pictured there for you on the screen, and he just runs away, but she holds on to the cloak. And this embarrassment and chagrin, and here she is with this man's cloak. How do you explain it? She concocts this story that he came in to attack me, to rape me. And husband Potiphar, what are we going to do about this? Well, we're going to send this man to jail. And that's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And sometimes it happens that we suffer for doing the right thing, but what we have to learn as followers of God, and from a young age, is you go ahead and you do the right thing. Whether there's immediate benefit for it or whether there might even be suffering involved. Again, I read from Peter earlier to show us how there's this constant battle that temptation would rob our holiness, and we need to be holy because God is holy. You know, Peter also told the Christians, you may very well suffer for doing right. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse number 14. "But even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you are blessed. And do not be afraid of their threats, nor be troubled." In chapter 4, and verse 15, "But let none of you suffer as a murderer, a thief, an evildoer, or as a busybody in other people's matters. Yet if anyone suffers as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this matter." He says, Christian, you may very well suffer for doing the best thing you could possibly do, and that's be a Christian. Let's live for the Lord. And people will hate you and persecute you, and you suffer for that. We can suffer for righteousness' sake. But I want to encourage you tonight, even if you might suffer for doing right, do the right thing. You'll be so glad that you did. I was talking to Julie and watched about this story, and she was like, yeah, we can suffer for doing the right thing. She remembered a math class she had back in junior high, and this is Blair, one of the best math teachers. I had her too later. One of the best math teachers, you know, I ever had, but a stern lady. And they were going over the tests together as a class, and Julie noticed that here's an incorrect answer on her paper. And so she went to Mrs. Blair after the class and she goes, "I just wanted you to see that, you know, you missed this. This one was, I actually got this one wrong." And she looked at it and she goes, "Okay." So she took it, she marked it wrong, she changed her grade. And Julie was just, because, I mean, I'm the same way. I always thought if the teacher missed it, that was a freebie, you know, that you get that one. That's on them. That's not on you. But you know what? Julie was going to be honest and let her know about this. And so she was going to be honest and judge it accordingly. Stern teacher there. That's kind of like suffering for doing right there a little bit in kind of a light way. You might find yourself at a party this year, young people. And some of those around you are starting to drink. And you refuse. You say, "No, I'm not going to do that." I'd like to tell you that when you just take that stand, why, you know, the record will scratch and the party will stop. And all the people at that party will just line up and like to shake your hand and thank you personally for taking a responsible stand. You're doing the right thing. But truthfully, many at that house, at that party, won't care whether you take a drink or not. And there will be some others, and you thought they were your friends, that actually just keep egging you on and pressuring you, "Oh, come on, oh, come on." And then there might be even some others that say, "Well, if you're not with this scene, I don't want to be your friend." because it makes them comfortable to be around people that don't do the same things they do. Okay? And so, you know, what's kind of the end of that story? Well, the end of that story is you might suffer and lose a friend or some friends for doing right. And that can hurt. You might find yourself this year out with your boyfriend, young ladies, and he's pressuring you to go all the way with him, and you resist. And I'd like to tell you that, you know, once you resist, that he'd apologize to you, and he'd be ashamed for bringing that up, and he promises he'll never try anything like that again. But there's a good possibility that, just like Potiphar's wife, he'll come back pressuring you again and again. And if you resist again and again, why, he might just break up with you altogether and go find him some new girlfriend who doesn't value herself or value her purity the way that you do, and she'll do exactly what he wants to do. And then you're going to see your boyfriend off with this other girl. And that's going to hurt. But I want to encourage you to do right. Do that right thing, even though you might suffer in the moment for doing it. Be young like Joseph. And if it means a moment of inconvenience or a moment of suffering for doing the right thing, still do that right thing. Because there is an abundant life to be had now. And there is God's eternal reward. Now, I'm going to tell you this. It is no small thing to have the promise of an eternal reward with God. That's no small thing. To think in our minds, if I will resist temptation, whatever that temptation is calling, I will be holy another day like God is holy, that God will reward me. I will have joy unspeakable, immeasurable, eternal for living faithfully to God. That's no small thing. But I also know that when the preacher's up there talking about heaven on a Sunday night, that can feel like a long way away. And I want you to know that there's immediate benefits. There are earthly benefits for doing the right thing, even though it may cause you to suffer for a moment. There's benefit resisting temptation in this life. It worked out for Joseph, didn't it? He suffered this temptation. He goes to jail. What happens in jail? In jail, everything he does prospers. And the jailer puts him in charge of everything. And God works events around so that he has an audience before Pharaoh. And ultimately, Joseph doesn't get to be number two in Potiphar's house. He's number two in the whole nation, the world power of Egypt. His only boss is Pharaoh. And God uses him to preserve his people and the lineage of the Messiah during a great time of famine. It's an amazing story of the providence of God. Okay? That means that in this life, Joseph saw some benefits for doing the right thing, though it cost him at the moment. And I just want to tell you, young people, you might lose a friend or drop a notch in popularity because you don't get high with some people. But you give it a few years. When you run into some of those same people, and they're in their 30s and they're in their 40s, and some of them got hooked on those drugs. And they're not saying, man, I wish we'd done some more drugs in their 30s and 40s. They're saying, man, I wish I could get off of this stuff. They make real messes out of their lives. And you'll say, you know what? There was a benefit in me taking a stand and resisting that temptation. And you might lose a boyfriend this year or a girlfriend this year because they're pressuring you to go all the way, and you don't go all the way. But I tell you, you just keep looking around. And when some of your classmates start turning up pregnant, or they get diseases, and they miss out on some of those trips that upperclassmen take, or they miss out on college or other opportunities because of the responsibilities and consequences of that sin, you're going to see some benefit. You're going to be thankful that you took that stand, that you stood for your purity, and you didn't go down that road. There's benefits now and in the years to come. And ultimately, there is an eternal reward of a home in heaven. I just, look at Joseph in this situation, and I think, man, if there was ever a young man that should have been given a medal for resisting temptation,
it didn't work out that way for him at that time. He suffered for resisting the temptation. And yet there was benefit in his life for doing the right thing, and certainly the great reward of God. And so I want to encourage us, as each of us, young and old, leave our houses. We go out into the world where there's influence and temptation calling to trade in our purity, to rob us of our holiness. Be young. Be like Joseph. Be older. And resist temptation like Joseph. We're going to sing a song of encouragement now. And for someone in the room with a spiritual need, maybe they need to become a Christian and take those first steps of faithful obedience, of confessing Christ and being baptized into Him. You have an opportunity to do that now. Maybe one who's struggling with sin in their life and wants to confess it and seek forgiveness and prayers of encouragement as they battle these things, as they battle temptations in their life. If we can help you with any spiritual need, I'd ask that you would come forward and make it known now. Together we stand and sing. Won't you come?